NRP S2 E37, Meanings and Methods of Textures. Hey everybody, welcome back to the show this week. I've got my good buddy Ian with me. How you doing, Ian?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
Oh, I'm super. Thanks for asking. So this week, Ian's prepared a little two-parter for us. He's going to be talking to us about textures.
Yep. The first part, I'll just be talking about mainly like the, what you could use textures for and, some of the types of textures.
Alrighty.
Okay, I'm sure you don't know that much about textures because you're a 2D guy, but I mean, you could use textures for like a whole lot of things. You could use textures for in TV shows. You can use stuff for like 3D in TV and 3D in films. Obviously games also you could use textures for, but you could also use textures for like designs, like logo designs. In the, you know, you have like a logo in front of like a brick wall or something mm-hmm. on your website, and yeah, obviously websites you could use textures for because a lot of websites have textures repeating in the background.
Mm-hmm.
I know you personally for your site you just like to have a flat background, but it just depends on your preference, I guess.
Well, I would, but it's like making stuff tileable is a little bit of a job, and I don't. I'd rather focus on site design than trying to fix a tile.
Yeah. But pretty much a texture can be anything, you know, with like a lot of information in it, just like patterns. You can, usually textures are like, they're even in all their dimensions, so, like if you have a texture that's like 1024 pixels, usually the other dimension is 1024, so usually they come in like powers of 2, 256, 512, 1024, and then it just goes up to like 2048 and just pretty much keeps doubling from there. But you know, you could have textures that are pretty much just like that are like really long width wise. It just depends on what you're trying to go for and what your design is, you know.
Yeah, like if you're using something to like texture, say, the wing of a plane, and you only want it to be long one way, it doesn't need to go all the way around, so.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Usually they're repetitive, but in all of their axes, but you can have them only tile in one axis, so like you were saying, on a wing of a plane, where if you have like rivets or something on it, and you just want it to tile along the wing, mm-hmm. that would be just in one dimension. Or usually web pages, if you have a texture in the background that repeats, so usually it'll be in both up and down and left and right.
Well, it depends on if the site moves left or right. A lot of sites try and lock it, and then if it's a fluid design, that changes when you stretch the actual browser out too. So you can lock orientation depending on how you want to set it up.
Right, or it doesn't have to repeat at all. You could have just take a texture of like a manhole cover, and a lot of times it's considered a texture. Other times, you know, you could it's just considered a picture. It just it depends on the application that you're using it for too, you know. Mm-hmm. So yeah, usually they're two dimensional, but they can be texture can technically be one dimensional, three dimensional, or even four dimensional, which is an animated texture pretty much.
Yeah, Minecraft uses animated textures in their tiles and stuff, so like stuff appears to move and jiggle or vibrate, and it looks weird.
Yeah.
You can do that when making games. I was doing that with Stencil. They have animated tile sets, and it's like, man, that would be cool, but I bet you it's going to take up a lot of space after a while.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it depends on if the animation is repeated, like how much it repeats over time, you know, or if it's just like a random animation, It all depends on the engine, you know, or
yeah, how it's sourcing it, because like if it's a pulling from like a GIF or something that or GIF, I guess is how you're supposed to pronounce it. I'm going to call it a GIF because that's what it is. But
yeah.
You know, like certain things might forever loop it, and then other scripts might say, you know, just play these frames from this animation. So like you can have all your animation stored in a frame, you know, in one file, and then have the script call up how many frames are a section to loop, and it's all, you know, it all depends on what you're pulling it up in. It
right.
Comes down to it.
Yeah. And it can, different textures can be projected into other dimensions. Usually when you project the texture into a lower dimension, you're going to lose information. And they can come in a variety of bit depths and color channels, which, do you know what the difference between, like, bit depth and bit depth per channel, which where like if you have a picture that's 32 bits versus 32 bits per channel.
Well, that's probably more information per individual channel versus the overall file.
Right. Well, I think a 32-bit image is usually that's like 8 bits per channel. So like 24-bit image is, you know, the RGB with 8 bits for each channel, and then the you have another channel, which is usually the alpha channel or the transparency.
Depending on the file that supports it, you know.
Right. And now if you have, like, if you have images where the channels have higher bit depth or color depth or however you want to call it, like, that just means that the colors can have more information between each color. So it has, there's more possibilities. So, like, a 32-bit image is usually like a, it's usually considered an HDRI, so it's has a higher dynamic range. An 8-bit is usually 256 channel or 256 steps of information. I'm not sure what your old take on all that stuff is, but.
Well, I mean, I don't usually memorize like number specs of things. I try and focus on what the project requires, and I look at what my options are, you know. Because I mean, some things are only, you know, just like with some things support alpha channels, some don't. Some have to be certain bits. It's like I always try to create with as many bits and as much capacity as you can, and then if the project requires it, slim it down.
Yeah, usually like a JPEG is just 8 bits per channel. Like a RAW file, like a CR2 file, which is a Canon RAW file, or a NEF file, NEF file. That's considered usually 16 or 14 bits per channel. And like an HDRI, which is usually in the EXR format or just HDR format, that's 32 bits per channel. Like I said, you could have a picture with an alpha channel, which is 32 bits for the image, but it could also be 32 bits per channel, so that would technically be, well, like 128 bits for the whole image. I think there's like 65,000 different colors for each channel in a 16-bit image, and then I think if you go all the way up to 32, I think it's in like the billions or trillions for just one channel, and then however many combinations of those colors would be astronomical, you know.
Yep.
But anyways, in 3D graphics, you know, like just like 3D modeling programs and animation, you can have multiple variations of the textures, like a diffuse texture, a bump map texture, or a normal map texture, or specular. It just depends on what your requirements for the look that you want to go for your model and the lighting.
Mm-hmm. And how much you want to get out of the texture too. Cause I mean, there's the standard flat texture, but then you get the bump mat, which, you know, tries to actually show some dimension and depth to it. And then the specular for the highlighting and all that stuff. You get a little bit more out of the more textures and stuff you put on it, the more you're going to get out of it, but you're also going to eat up a lot of resources. So,
right.
And time.
Well, for example, if you want to have it depends on the type of, material that you're looking to emulate. If you're trying to make like a model that's made out of glass, you're not really going to use a bump map for that. But if you're trying to make something that's made out of rock, then yeah, you can use a bump map or a normal map. Those are, they're different ways to calculate the surface detail, and it reacts to lighting differently so that if you change the lighting, that the texture is going to change also. So, and like specular is just like if you have a texture of a floor or something, but you want to have like some blood on the floor, if you painted some blood on the floor, you would want that the areas of blood to have a higher specularity than just like the floor if it was like a tile floor or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And textures, I would have them fall under like four different categories. Usually textures are procedural, hand-painted, or photographic, or textures can also be textures that are just specifically for 3D models that are meant to be projected on the 3D model. So the 3D texture, that category of a texture would be just textures that you're trying to make for like 3D models, for like a barrel or a box or something. A texture that's specific for that 3D model that only looks good because it's projected for that 3D model, the 3D model's geometry. It's projected in a certain way that it fits on it. Well, it's sort of like clothes on a person, or if you sew like some fabric for like a pillow or something, that thing is only going to fit on a pillow because you stitched the seams and everything correctly for that pillow, or for like a t-shirt for a person. And if you open it up in like Photoshop or something, it's just going to look like a bunch of weird shapes, and that's because the 3D program takes that image and it wraps and warps and stitches it in a certain way on the 3D model so that the 3D model looks like it's a real object. Do you sort of understand what I mean?
Yeah, I get it.
Okay, that's good. Procedural textures, those are usually generated by the software. They could be generated randomly or using like mathematical equations. It's usually, there's a lot of math involved in how they're generated, but some programs that you can use for those types of textures are, I don't know how you say it.
Algorithmic?
Yeah, that's how you say it. That's the title of the company, but the program is called Substance Designer.
Mm-hmm.
So you just say a type of software that you can use for doing procedural textures is Substance Designer. You can use a program called MapZone, Genetic Texture Generator. There's like a whole slew of software out there for creating procedural textures where you don't have to like make the texture, or you don't have to take a picture of the texture. And it's just software for, you put in like different variables and parameters and it'll make a texture for you pretty much.
Like you tell it how shiny you want something to be, how smooth something needs to be.
Well, sort of, yeah, but those programs are usually more for making like the picture of the texture.
Mm-hmm.
You can have textures that are procedurally generated within the 3D program itself, and you don't even need to have a file that's saved. It's just in the program, in your file that you're in your 3D file, so you don't have to have like a bitmap saved or anything. And hand painted textures are usually patterns or designs that you digitally or traditionally paint to make something specific. Yeah, you can either do it digitally, or you can hand, you could do it with like paints or charcoal or pencil. It just depends on the type of texture you're trying to go for, you know. You could probably even use some of those paints that are like really thick and heavy and just like splatter them everywhere if that's, you know, if you're trying to get that information from me, you know.
Trying to get a Jackson Pollock look on a texture.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, I've seen people try and get like that Van Gogh texture that's like that thick impasto swirly style, and it's like, you know, you model the character and then you would have that texture on it and it just looks kind of weird, man, but cool in a way.
Yeah. And software you can use for that obviously is Photoshop, Corel Painter, Illustrator, because you can use, I think you could do some kind of vector drawing in there with some brushes and stuff, I think.
Well, I mean, you could probably make up textures in MS Paint if you really wanted to. It's just,
yeah.
Yeah, it's just, you wouldn't want to, is the thing.
Yeah, you wouldn't. You definitely wouldn't want to, man. But photographic textures are obviously designs or patterns taken with a camera. or you can technically, if I guess you could argue that if you scan something in, that's considered a photographic, or you can use other optical devices to take a picture of something, like, because people use, they'll use almost anything as a texture sometimes, like you'll use like x-ray pictures of just like bones and stuff for textures in a video game, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're in a level with like a crazy doctor, a mad scientist or something, sometimes I see pictures of like x-rays of the like skull and stuff. And yeah, I mean, you can do a lot of creative ways to get a texture, you know.
Well, I mean, you know, there's a lot of that in 2D design kind of stuff too. People will find like all kinds of unique looking, you know, like old aged paper or, you know, wrapping paper that has, you know, has certain looks to it or certain patterns, and you scan that in and then, you know, use it to fill in a pattern or design it. You know, I mean, of course, the argument really comes down to, like, if, you know, if you're taking like something that was printed and then just scanning it, that's not really, you know, photographic so much as just kind of stealing, unless you alter it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And obviously the programs that you can do photo editing is would be Photoshop, Corel Photo Paint, or Corel Painter. I don't know if you can open up an image in the Corel Painter, but I think the image editing program for Corel was supposed to be Photo Paint. And there's just tons of photo editing software out there. You just have to, that's just one of those things where you just have to Google it if you want to find a good photo editing program, you know? And then we already sort of went over the 3D modeling textures. I sort of explained about that. They can be created for the model, or a lot of times you can get textures from the model also, because you can, like, what's called, like, baking, like, lighting and stuff for games.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can, if you want to render out, like, some kind of bump map from the height and the detail of the model. It's sort of like you would for ZBrush.
Yeah, I saw a guy on YouTube who he baked in some of the models, and I think he was using Blender at the time. He had, like, his specular and his bump map and then all this other stuff.
Right, and a couple times I've actually needed where I needed to make, like, a bump map from just, like, a terrain model or something, where I needed the lower parts to be black and the higher parts to be white, and so I just rendered it from a top-down view to get that texture from the model. There's lots of various ways where you can do baking and texture rendering from your 3D software. You just gotta, it just depends on the software that you use, you know, and what methods that software uses. You just gotta, that's another Google a thing, you know, or you just look in the manual of your 3D program. And then obviously the types of software that you could use for 3D models is Maya, Max, ZBrush. There's tons of software also for 3D.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess I'll sort of get into the, like, the dimensional explanation of textures, like 1D textures, 2D textures, 3D. You know, technically a 1D texture or design or image is just a pretty much a gradient, you know. There's only one dimension of information. And usually those can be represented by pixels or curves a lot of times. If you mess around in Photoshop, you'll notice that there's, like, a lot of curve presets and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And those curves are technically one-dimensional, because it goes from one point of information to the other, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you can repeat gradients, and you can randomize gradients. It just depends on the design that you're going for. And obviously those can have different colors and bit depths, and that you can map those to other values as well. So, like, you can map a gradient, obviously, you know, you can map a gradient to, like, a black and white image. So you could sort of, like, if you're trying to go for, like, a thermal camera effect or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously you've probably messed with the gradient tool a lot in Photoshop.
Yeah, the gradient, I mean, it has its different options, you know. It's got the one with the alpha, it goes a color to white, and then there's all kinds of built-in gradients and whatnot. And also, I've used, you know, the curve, and, you know, it's you can use that to wipe out colors, and just, you know, if you got an image that you need to make a transparent background and it doesn't have an alpha channel, you can use the curves to filter stuff out, or It's kind of like the threshold, but a little bit different.
Yeah, and, you know, using that for textures, like I said, you could use it for carpets and fabrics. Like, if you're trying to go for, like, a certain carpet design that has lines going across it or whatever, you know, you could design that in a gradient editor in Photoshop and then make that as a pattern for your 3D model if you wanted to, or the background of your website or whatever use you have for it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that there is some software out there where you can make gradients that are, like, randomly generated. I don't think Photoshop has an option where you can, like, make gradients automatically with just, like, different colors in the gradient. I think you actually have to, you have to make specific points on the gradient manually, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, you can, if you don't want to make a gradient, you can always find plenty.
Yeah, obviously, hand painting a gradient really technically doesn't exist, although you could, you just do it manually, point by point, you know. You can photograph a gradient, but it would, in order for it to be a true gradient, you'd have to project it down to 1D. You'd have to, like, take, like, one slice of your image that you took a picture of to get the gradient information from it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'll talk about 2D textures a little bit. Usually those are raster, which are pixels, or vector, which are lines, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Shapes.
Math.
Yeah. These types of textures are used, they're most commonly used by, like, art and computer graphics and almost every kind of artistic field. 2D is used, you know, in one form of the or the other. Technically, even with 3D things, a lot of things are still technically 2D because, like, the surface of the model is 2D, even though it's a 3D model, because it's made out of polygons and vertices and edges.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you go, I'm sure you've played video games where you get stuck inside of the world and you realize it's not really solid, right?
You go always fall through a vertice, or, you know, you bump up against a background that's really a texture that wasn't, you know, wasn't a model image. Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously 2D textures can also be repeatable and randomized and tileable. They can also have a variety of color and bit depth. Okay, yeah, obviously, procedurally generated 2D textures are just, like, patterns, usually random patterns, that are generated by, like, the 3D software or whatever software you're using. And you can have a procedural texture be tiled or repetitive, or it can be random. So you could, like, move the pattern, and it'll be different. It won't tile at all, you know? You could have a pattern that's procedurally made that, like, goes on forever, and you almost won't see a part of the pattern. Two parts of the pattern will be the same, you know?
Because that's the problem with the texturing, is some people, like, don't realize if you don't texture something big enough or the right way, you start seeing all the little clones of itself around.
Yeah, exactly.
Seams and stuff.
Yeah, that's the downside of repeating a texture, like, in video games, because you see an obvious pattern, like, on the terrain or whatever, you know?
Mm.
Okay, well, we've talked a little bit already about hand-painted 2D patterns or textures. They're usually hand-painted by a Cintiq or mouse or whatever input device that you have digitally. Hand-painting textures can also be considered, like, making shapes and stuff and using different blending modes to make a texture, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It just implies something that the user had to make from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously we talked about traditional textures can be painted or scanned in. So, and obviously you can take photographs of textures, or you can scan them in. And in a lot of cases, you can actually video record a texture. Like, if you wanted a texture of just, like, some foam from the water that's like splashing up or something at a beach, if you want to get those foam bubbles, if you want to get a texture of that,
mm-hmm,
put in your scene. I mean, it has limited uses, but if you're creative enough, you could find a use for it, you know.
Well, I mean, with most texture things, it's like, you know, sometimes you can take a texture that was intended for something and then, you know, change it, filter it out a certain way, flip it, and use it for something else entirely. So,
yeah. And then, you know, 2D textures for 3D models is, you know, that's really common in a lot of 3D and 3D games and 3D animation. But like I said, it's a 2D image that's projected on a 3D model, and it's stitched on a 3D model. And then, okay, we'll get into 3D textures, which it's usually only meant for like 3D stuff, like 3D animations or movies or effects. And a lot of times it's also used for scientific reasons. It can be tiled or randomized. Usually 3D textures are only, technically voxels are like the raster format for 3D textures, but you've heard of voxels, right?
Yeah.
And those can also have different color depths as well. You can have voxels that have an alpha channel as well. So you can do 3D textures that have variations in the transparency of the 3D texture, you know. So you could do things like smoke or fire, or, you know, like if you have like a 3D model of a sponge, you can actually have like a shader that renders out voxels where some parts are transparent and you have all the little pores and nooks and crannies in the sponge, you know, and you can render that out. It'll take forever to render it out, but it can be done in a lot of 3D programs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Those can also be animated also. So if you're going to 4D, which is pretty much just animation, you know, or time, you can have voxels that animate in. So you can do animated simulations like fire or smoke or fluids or liquids, you know. Usually when you do simulations like that, usually you use some kind of particle system or something like that. But you can sort of fake it if you use like 3D textures. It depends on what your 3D software supports. If it supports even using voxels or not, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times for Macs, you can get like shaders or whatever that renders out voxels inside of the 3D model.
Yeah, because I remember there was when I was looking at Minecraft stuff, people were saying, "Oh, you know, why don't they use voxels in Minecraft?" It's like, well, because it would be very intensive, and like, you know, Minecraft is done in Java, so it'd be, it's not exactly built for that kind of thing.
Right. I guess that would pretty much be it for the explanations and, you know, the different uses that you could use for different kinds of textures. And you just have to be creative in thinking of how you use them and what you can use and what you're using them for, you know. The sky's the limit with your imagination, as corny as that sounds.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, remember back when we were using 3D Max in school and the new version introduced the tree and suddenly everybody's project had a tree in it? Or yeah. There's always the teapot, and it's like, for whatever reason, somebody would always manage to throw one of those in. It's like, you know, if you're going to throw something into your project, be original with it. You know, be creative and use something that somebody wouldn't expect, and they go, hey, what's that? Wait, how'd you manage to pull that one off?
Yeah.
I mean, I've had limited experience with textures. You know, obviously I used them in 3D classes, and then I've used them in 2D, you know, stuff producing images, you know. And I know people that they'll add a texture, so like, you know, they'll color like a wall, and then they'll throw in a texture of like, you know, brick behind it or something, you know, and lower the opacity of it, so it kind of gives it a little bit, you know. These things, you know, textures can be great, and then they can also be kind of a crutch for some people, just like anything else.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you kind of need to rely on the thing that you're animating or the thing that you're modeling, you know, a little bit more than just like, you know, it'd be very easy to just take pictures of everything and then you go, why didn't you just make a photo rather than try and model it? And don't be a slave to, you know, one resource or one way of working, basically.
Right. Well, in the next podcast, I'll probably talk about the fact that you can mix different kinds of textures. So if you mix, like, photographs and you mix hand painting, you can sort of create some pretty cool effects with that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's it for this episode. Ian, I think you did a good job.
Well, thank you, sir.
Yeah, and we're going to be, stay tuned next week, we're going to be having the second part where you talked about meanings and methods of textures. What's the second part going to encompass?
It's not going to be as long as this one, probably. It'll be a little bit shorter. It'll just give you some tips and tricks for doing textures. I'll probably focus mainly just on the 2D part of the textures. I won't get into how you do like 3D volumetric textures that much, because that gets more into the 3D realm. I sort of wanted to keep this a general...
Best means and practices, I gotcha.
Yeah, it's for a general, I don't know, you could just, like I said, you can use textures for just about every field of art, so I was trying to keep it more generalized for everybody, so I don't want to, I'm a 3D guy, but I don't want to get too much just into the 3D part, but...
Well, I mean, you can use textures for everything from brushes in drawing programs to, you know, modeling and adding textures to a 3D fully rendered environment in a video game. So it's got a lot of potential. So it's a lot of things to consider, and you really just want to give like a primer. And then if you wanted to talk specifically about, you know, modeling or using it in a certain example, that's a different thing in itself.
Right. But like I said, it's not going to be that long. It'll just be some tips and tricks that you can sort of use. So you don't have to worry if you were able to get through this first podcast that was sort of long, then don't worry, this one, you don't have that much farther to get through the second one.
That's an all right. It's all right. I'll insert like a dancing monkey or something. Keep their attention. So,
but I hope you enjoyed this first podcast, and hopefully you took something away from it, you know?
You took my innocence away with this podcast, Ian. Well, you said take something away from it. Anyway, so... Thanks for tuning in, everybody. That's it for this week. We'll be tuning in next week for part two, and we'll see you all on the other side.
Thanks for listening.
More, visit NoRightsProductions.com. Follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/NoRights. And hey, why don't you check out my Tumblr at NoRights.tumblr.com.